Indie Can Music presents the Toronto Indie Scene, bringing you an hour of Canada's best emerging artists and a look behind the scenes with industry insiders and artists. We have with us Martin Brown, co-producer of the Toronto Independent Music Awards. But first, live at Indie Can from Calgary, it's 1-900. That was a great song you started out with. Who does most of the writing? Is that Jason?
Yeah, it's Jakin. Jakin, yeah, we say Jakin. I usually bring in kind of the idea, and then we all collaborate and finish her off.
Now, according to the liner notes, there's someone else who co-writes with
you. Yeah, Brian House. He's a producer, so if he came up with a bit of a chorus or add some words here and there, we had to give him a little bit of production credit, so that's kind of where that came through. But yeah, I brought most of it, and then he just kind of helps out here and there, and then we bring it for arrangements, and each guy brings his own part to the table and go from there.
Now, according to the subject matter of some of the songs, I'd suggest perhaps you have issues.
No.
Hey, isn't every musician?
Yeah, that's right. Girl, guy, problems. It's what we know. It's what we write about. I know it's kind of getting a little bit cheese ball at this point. Yeah, so we're just going to keep that vein going. Everyone's got the same problems. We're just trying to be a little bit universal on the same problems everyone else has, and hopefully you can reach other people and people have the same problems, and we can go from there.
Absolutely. I think the songs, sure, they're catchy. The subject matter is quite universal.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's well received by the audiences.
Yeah, people have been enjoying it. Right, Harvey?
Everybody says that he has issues. That's the first thing everybody says. Oh, I wouldn't want to be in his relationship.
Yeah, and it's not like as literal as it's supposed to be. It's more just tongue-in-cheek.
It's a broad story. Yeah, a beginning
like,
and ending.
I'm like, every single thing is something to do with my life, or it's usually just a story or something I've read or someone else in the band's problems or whatnot. So that's where that usually comes from.
Harvey, tell us about your gig with Motley Crue. How did that come around?
They were pulling through Red Deer, I guess, and they knew ahead of time that Tommy was had tendonitis. They didn't know what they were going to do, so one of the local promoters called me as a backup plan, and I think right up to the last minute, they didn't know if they were going to use me yet or not. So they called me, and I had a couple hours notice just to get the Red Deer and get ready to play with Motley Crue.
And what was that like?
I don't know. Everybody made a bigger deal out of it than I thought it was going to be, because for me, like, we play drums all the time, we're playing all the time, and I just thought, like, you know, it's a big deal, but everybody else, it was the rags to riches story, and for me, like, we play all the time, so that's what you do, but it didn't sink into a couple weeks later how big it really was, and everybody else in the world wanted to know how it was, so I guess, you know, it was big.
Yeah, a drum kit in front of you, lights in your eyes, it doesn't matter how many people are behind them, right?
Right. Pyro going off. I was more scared about the pyro than anything. So.
Oh, yeah, and Tommy Lee sitting
And Tommy Lee sitting beside me, punched me in the leg.
Yeah,
that's like, come on, show off! That was crazy.
All right, we are 1-900. It's our first single, Make Up Sex.
You guys are playing with Nickelback and 3 Days Grace. Is that, if you're a band from the prairies, is that everyone's dream or is it an obligation?
We'd rather be combining, good fortune, I think.
We played with both of them before in the past. We played Nickelback when there was like 50 people there, you know what I mean? So we've seen them kind of rise up, and we played with 3 Days Grace a couple years ago. So it's just good to come play Toronto and to play with all those people there. That's kind of why we're excited to play with them. If it was Nine Inch Nails or anybody, we'd be just as happy. But, yeah, we like Nickelback. That's all we hear on CJ, so believe me, we know our Nickelback tunes. But, yeah, it's all good. What do you think, Mike?
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, come on. Oh, yeah,
yeah,
the Roadhammers, yeah.
It's all about the hammers right there. Hey, Mike?
Country rock.
It's all about hammers. Hammers.
Alberta, boys. It's good times.
It's good.
So has everyone here played in Toronto before or first time in town?
No, we've played four times, I think, over the years, different occasions.
Just no one noticed because no one came and watched us.
Yeah. A couple showcases and Canadian Music Week, North by Northeast. And, yeah, we just probably four shows total and a little smoozing here and there.
How long have you been together as a band now?
About 7 years. We had different members prior. Got a couple new guys, Mike and RJ are the newer ones. We got rid of a keyboard player because, well, it's keyboards. And then, yeah.
Well, you'll hear that at the same
time. Yeah, we whittled it down to four of us. It's just easier to go on the road, easier to play, set up, do these kind of things. It's all good.
Now, you've had some hard luck stories as far as record labels coming out to hear you, things like that. Can you talk a little bit about some of those stories?
Go ahead.
How much time do you have?
Yeah. just some American labels merging while we're doing our showcases, you know, paying up front, guys getting fired before we even get to New York. We had that happen a couple times. We had a Toronto showcase where the president was fired 2 days after we had played with her.
So basically, if you work for a record company, don't have a showcase for you because you're probably going to lose your job.
Hey, man. But yeah, it was ridiculous. You know, we find it out in the paper the next day. Like, just, it's been cheese ball. And that was for about a year and a half solid. We've had a lot of fishy things go on.
But good music air miles now, though.
It's music business. That's the way it is.
You've ended some careers.
Yeah, we have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Amen.
What's it like in Calgary as a performing band, as a touring band? How busy can you keep, and what's it like going on the road out west?
It's slow. There's just not much. Like 6 years ago, I'd say probably six clubs in Calgary. There's now two, if that. You know what I mean? All the clubs are shutting down, and we're having to play like dance clubs and stuff like that, bringing in our own PA, setting it up. Like, we can bring 600 people to a dance club to hear rock's probably a good thing, but...
Yeah, we got to do all our own promotion. The local clubs are more of a underground kind of scene, and they have pretty much no production and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you go there and there's nothing.
Like either PAs. We'll be playing for a touring band that's coming through,
yeah,
or we'll be promoting our own show for the most part at any venue that we got to put on ourselves.
It's like that anywhere. Edmonton's kind of the same vibe. You know, Vancouver, we used to go out there all the time, and it's kind of the same thing. There's just the clubs aren't there anymore, and which means the bands aren't there. And if you can get a good gig with a signed bigger artist, it's great. But on your own, boo, it's rough.
Yeah, I met a bunch of bands from Edmonton that all moved here just because they did all they could out there, and, you know, they're trying to grind their teeth on the Toronto market, which streets aren't paved with gold here. I don't know what they're saying out there, but it isn't easy here either, but at least, you know, you don't have to drive as far to get to a new audience.
Well, yeah. But, you know, if you're good enough, it doesn't really matter where you're from. They're going to come and find you. But it's just, you have to work double as hard out there because there's no labels out there. There's no management. There's no...
No one cares.
Booking. Yeah, like no one even knows who we are because the shows we're doing in Calgary, if we were doing that in Toronto, well, it'd be ridiculous. Everyone would be freaking out. But out there, it's just, yeah, it's pretty low key. That's why people come, I think, to the big city like Toronto, Vancouver, because it's way bigger.
So 7 years, what keeps you going?
Stupidity.
Debt. Pay that off, boys. Royal Bank loan. Let's go.
You know, it's those close calls. You get so close every time, and you're like, oh, what if?
Can't quit.
Why quit now? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the truth of it.
A couple big shows.
Really, Mike could have quit about a year ago if he could have.
It's just the big, you do a couple big shows, and then you're hooked. You just want to get back to that.
Now, you've had some great things happen as well in terms of people being attracted to your record. I understand that even overseas, there's a demand for it. You've run out of copies and had to get more. So what are your hopes for this particular album?
Sell about 4 million, I think, eh,
Hardy? Yeah, that'd be good to pay.
Would that cover the debt, do you think?
I think if we could get a broader audience to actually hear it, it seems like whoever actually finally gets to hear it likes it. You know, and that's been our problem the whole time. If we can get a video out there or get some radio behind it, that'll be the key to success, and that's obviously the key to anything, but everybody that listens to it likes it, so. Yeah,
give it a chance, you're going to be sold.
Yeah, and it's just hard to have people hear it out in Alberta. You know, CJ plays it a bit, which is good. We got some radio stations playing it, but until we got it, like, on a wide scale, yeah, it's going to be a rough haul.
In a place like Calgary, do they support indie bands, or do they just do what they're told?
And they do what they're told, but you really, really got to grease the wheel if you want to get in. They will make a little bit of room, but it hasn't been easy.
Pretty much you got to fill in for Tommy Lee, and then after that you get a bit of press for a couple months. Yeah,
they talk about us on the radio every 5 minutes.
Yeah, like they're all over. It's just the playlists now are so minute, they're worried about everyone, you know, buying time that they got to play a certain amount of bands. Yeah, a certain amount of Tom Cochran. It's tricky, but whatever. It's rock. Got to do it.
So what do you see coming up for you in the next little while for 1-900?
Just a lot of shows, playing, selling CDs, drinking.
Like to get a video out there so people know what we look like, and then they think, like, God, Mike's sexy. I got to buy that album.
Yeah.
Then we'd be set.
Yeah, and run the Tommy Lee thing to the ground.
Yeah,
come on.
That's right.
Yeah, no, we're just the same as usual. Just hopefully I can get to a broader audience. Yeah, it's all good.
Take over the world after that. Just that's a small thing.
Yeah, it's already
cliche,
come on.
Isn't it?
Come on,
you just make that up today or what?
No.
And by the time you do, it won't be worth anything anymore.
No.
Hell, I know.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for coming into IndieCan. I wish you the best of success because the music is great. I hope it does find the audience it deserves because it's catchy. And I got a copy of your CD from Chris Case and put it in my CD player in the car, and it just went round and around and around and really dug.
Round it goes.
Yeah, where it stops.
No one knows.
There we go, yeah.
One step behind me, you have always been stuck in the 90s with your heels dug in. Well, I'm going forward, pulling me back. This is going nowhere, and I don't like I'll go. true now, I hope you know. I won't let you talk to me.
Hi, it's Chris Case from RCD Music and Burr Records. I hear it first on the Toronto indie scene.
Okay, that was from Blow Your Mind, Ripped. Do you hear the garbage in there? I've listened to this whole CD. There's some Cranberries-sounding songs there. There's a Blondie cover. It's great. It's www.rippedmusic.com. Before that, Bukkake Catholic. And the album was Your Fitness Challenge. This was produced by Rob Sanzo and Brad Moss. Rob Sanzo seems to have a theme at IndieCan. Last episode, he engineered Carol Pope's CD, and you might recall Rose Perry from Antihero raving about what a great producer he is. We'll have to have him in sometime. Now, Bukkake Catholic, there's more to them than just using the most creative uses of the letter K. In all of indie punk history, the band is called BukkakeKatholik.com, BukkakeCatholic.com. This band, there's great showmanship in what they do, and they're sacrilegious characters. The band members are Mister's Sister Fister on drums, Assault Boy on lead guitar, Ms. Easter Feaster on bass, and Ms. Reverend Trash, vocals, and SG guitar. I met up with the good Reverend Trash at the Antihero show at Canadian Music Week, and got to know her a little bit. And if you miss them at North by Northeast, go to their webpage, because they're playing around town and you got to check them out. Now, back to the beginning, we started with Scarlet Sins. They played at Downsview Park. That's where I met them for the first time. They are Chris, Callie, and Sylvia, and a rotating bass player. It seems they have a little bit of trouble tying one down. They're steady, they're busy, they're devoted to rock music. Being one of their 4,200 MySpace friends, I was on their site today, and they just uploaded 3 new mixes for the songs Above Ground, Drown, and Reborn. I love Above Ground, but I went with Backstabber. This maintains this boy-girl angst started by 1-900. I suppose this is the female retort. Now, IndieCan will continue this summer to draw as many of the touring bands that come through Toronto. Thanks again to JD, Mike Harvey, and RJ from 1-900. That was just a great set. We'll have one more song for them. Andre will be back with me later in the show when we interview Martin Brown, and let's get on to the music. Okay, up next is Nathan Slonioski. Sorry, Nathan, if I butchered your last name. His CD is No Wicked for the Rest. There's some great songs on here. He's got a song called Who Rules the World, which is a total attack on George Bush. I don't think it's fair to have a battle of wits with an unarmed man, but anyhow, it's a funny tune. But that doesn't fit into the boy-girl angst, so I'm going to go with song 10, which is Wanderin' for You. Let's have a listen. Someday.
no such thing as true love. Then I just want to free. I try to be amazed, I try to be amused. So how can I be happy when I'm wandering for you? Yeah, how can I be happy when I'm wandering for you?
That was Tin Bangs again. Played them a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to have them in soon. I got to see them live. It was just great. I also got to chat a little bit with their manager and also with their producer, who is Michael McKenzie. Really interesting guy. He's played a lot of rock and roll. He's produced quite a few acts. We'll have to get him in sometime, too. Something else I wanted to mention is a new store in Toronto called Silver. It's at 703 Queen Street West, just west of Bathurst. Check it out. It's full of indie everything. It's got indie records. You'll find Bukkake Catholic there, the Scarlet Sinners there, and a whole host of other indie records are there. All kinds of artwork. Go check it out, please. Leave with something. It's a great store and it deserves our support. Andre and Martin are on deck. Let's chat with Martin Brown about this year's Toronto Independent Music Awards. We have with us in our studio, unbeknownst to him, one of the inspirations for Indie Can Music. Martin Brown is co-producer of the Toronto Independent Music Awards, which Andre and I attended the inaugural event in October of 2005. We really liked what was going on, and we thought, hey, we can build a weekly show around this. So, Martin, can you tell us a little bit about how you and Daniela first got the idea of doing Toronto Independent Music Awards and then how you felt about your first effort in 2005?
I actually think I have to leave now because the burden of responsibility for being your inspiration is too much for me. I was introduced to Daniela, who is my co-producer of this event in LA about 18 months ago. I have been doing similar shows in California for 5 years. The Orange County Music Awards was the first one that I did. We just finished our fifth one of that. And I was introduced to Daniela, and Daniela told me that she thought there was a need for this kind of show in Toronto. And I said, well, let's do it. It's as easy as that. I'd already done, at that point, I think 5 shows. I have an imprint or a product that I think works the way that we do it, which is, you know, has to do primarily with integrity. It's driven from a passion for music, not for making a lot of money. And therefore, I think that's why it works. You know, if it was profit motivated, it wouldn't work. Daniela and I seem to share the same general philosophy, even though there are many decades between us in age. That kind of works in our favor, I think, in a number of instances. And so we just decided to try it and see what happened. So we were able to pull it off. I think it was fairly successful for a first year for having zero sponsor dollars. It was basically funded by the artists who participated through their submission fees, their participation in ads in the program and tracks on a compilation CD that we did, and bringing their friends to the show who bought tickets. And so I think it went well. We were well received by the media. I didn't see any negative media. I got a lot of positive feedback. So spurred by that, you know, we decided, well, you know, obviously we're going to go forward with this and make it a bigger event this year.
How many submissions did you get for your first year?
First year we got, I'm speaking from memory, which is a really bad thing for me to do. I think we got about 300 submissions for the first one, which was about the same as it was for the other ones that I've done.
For how many awards in total?
I believe we had 20 awards. And, you know, we're trying to reach every musical community with this. I mean, the point of this is, the philosophy behind it is to provide exposure and recognition for truly independent artists. And we really are interested in independent artists that are not signed to anything other than a label that they started themselves. We're not really interested in bands that have major label distribution, because that's not independent as far as I'm concerned. We're working with bands that play in clubs, you know, up and down the city, you know, not getting paid, playing to, you know, empty beer glasses, you know, having no recognition for anything that they do. We're providing a forum for them to actually get some recognition. And we're everything from solo acoustic to death metal to hip hop to country. You know, we want to reach as many communities as possible.
If you got death metal, I've got something for you.
It's really the problem with we had a metal category for the first time this year in Orange County. And some of the bands that were nominated in that category said, no, we don't want to be nominated in that category because we're death metal. There's a point at which you can't subcategorize too much. Otherwise, right, we end up with 97 categories. You know, yeah, we have a category for songs about dogs, you know, and it's too much. The categories, we sometimes get some complaints about the categories that bands end up being nominated in. Mm-hmm. But they have, you know, bands have to understand that the point is to get some exposure. And if you think you're an indie band, not a pop rock band, it's the same thing as far as I'm concerned. We have as many categories as possible just to provide exposure for as many bands as possible.
Yeah.
And it's not for the cynics out there, it's not to sell as many tickets as possible either, because the nominees all get free tickets. So it's not about that.
Hmm. Now, Andre, you knew a lot of the acts that were actually nominated there. What kind of feedback did you get from the indie artists about the first Toronto Independent Music Awards?
Raina, for example, I don't know if she was just over the moon for one to be nominated. And when I saw her that night, her eyes were just popping. She was loving it and thought it was a great night and a great opportunity to, put the nomination on her bio. Ray Materic, he was up for an award.
Yep.
And, he was loving it. Thought it was a great thing. So got me motivated to this year send in a package for it, for my Canteen Knockout project. It's a great thing for indie artists, because Raina just came out of the gate. I mean, brand new CD, brand new artist. Next thing she knows, she's got this nomination. And when I heard her music, I was totally floored. I thought, this is amazing. I had been working with her as a writer for Spill Magazine for 3 years, and she didn't say anything about her talents. I was, you know, we were all just totally rooting for her. We thought it was great. So, yeah, it's a great platform for Toronto bands to get out from, you know, the basement or you know, like you were saying, just behind that free glass of beer they get when they play their shows, and you know, make known what they can do.
And it's, you know, it's for all the parents who continually say to their kids, "When are you going to get a real job?" You know, this is, you know, what you're doing. You're wasting your time.
It's great inspiration.
Here's something that we've achieved now. Look, you know, and you know, I don't want to overstate the importance of this either. I mean, it is just, it's an independent music award show. It's not,
and it's not corporate like the Canadian Music Week Indies. When you go to the Indies, it's bands that are being spun on FM 102, big bands.
Right,
you know what
it's
I mean?
Bands that are, if they're on indie labels, they have major distribution, so that's the same thing as being on a major label.
So, I mean, when I see those indie awards, I mean, they're like comparable to the Junos almost. I mean, they're huge bands.
Right.
And us indie artists look at that, we're like, we don't really stand much of a chance against, you know, like you said, bands that are distributed by Universal and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's big time, you know.
Let's talk about the adjudication process. How do you adjudicate, and why do you do it that way, and what makes it different from other awards?
I think that the way that we do it, I don't believe anyone else does it like this, and it does depend on us being able to get people to volunteer their time, because, you know, this does not make money, so, you know, we have to rely on volunteer labor. But the way that we work it, and the way that we've devised this, is to make it as fair as possible. So what we do is we take two tracks from each band. They submit their material. They tell us which two songs they want us to use. We take those two songs and we burn compilation CDs with about approximately 20 tracks on each CD. We send those out individually to our judges, and we have typically between 5 and 8 judges that are, you know, picked or that volunteer, that have some musical knowledge, that are either involved in the music industry or, you know, have a deep knowledge of music. We send those CDs out blank. They don't know what they're listening to. They get no information about any of the acts that are on there. They're just listening to songs. And their judging criteria can be whatever they want it to be, whatever's important to them. If Judge A thinks that lyrical content is the only thing that makes a song great, then that's how they're going to judge every song. They're going to be consistent, you know, throughout. If, you know, Judge B might want innovative music, you know, arrangements, they want to hear something that they've never heard before, so that's important to them. That's how they'll judge. They score each song out of 100, and they just email the scores back. So we get a, you know, document that says, you know, CD 3, track 1, 84, track 2, 73, etc. And we fill out, you know, that on a huge spreadsheet with all those scores. And when we've finished doing all that, the top 5 scores in each musical genre become the nominees, and the one with the highest score becomes the winner.
And what's the process? Let's say there are bands listening or fans listening who have a favorite band that they want to say, hey, you should get in on this. How do they apply, and what's the deadline for the 2006
The deadline's the end of August. All the submission information is on the website, which is torontoima.com. They can submit by mail. I mean, we actually prefer them to send in a hard copy CD. They need to send in... No, we don't need photos anymore. We're just like a basic contact information, so we know how to get a hold of them. We have a $25 submission fee, and the reason we have that is because this is our only cash flow. We have no other money until the night of the show, and we have expenses to, you know, mailing and phones, and, you know, the same expenses that any other business has, basically. That's and nominees all get free tickets. So the $25 that you send in now, if you're a band with 4 people and you get nominated, you're actually going to save money because it's a $10 ticket or something. So you send in your CD. I mean, you can submit electronically through SonicBids if you really have to, but, you know, they keep half the money, so we're not that keen on that. We would rather have the money ourselves, so, you know, you can just mail the CDs in. That's the best way to do it.
Now, you do have a big-time Toronto personality who emceed the first show, Josie Dyer from CFNY.
Yeah, Josie emceed it. I had actually a personal relationship with her. I met her on a plane. The first time I came to Toronto to have meetings, when I flew back, she was actually sitting next to me, and I got talking to her. She was flying out to interview Shirley Manson from Garbage, and she was kind of nervous, so I was helping her write questions out for Shirley. And I got to talking to her about what I do, And you know, she was really excited about it. I mean, she was so supportive. The Edge as a station couldn't be involved because, you know, they need advertising dollars that we don't have. But Josie as an individual was extremely supportive. I went on her show a couple times to pump the, you know, our show up, and she did a pretty good job of emceeing, I thought.
Yeah.
DJs typically are really good at doing that. We have DJs host the ones in California. They, you know, they know how to keep it going and how to, you know, if things aren't going so well backstage and they need to pad it out a little bit, they're pretty good at just being ad-lib.
I thought it was smooth. You know, the curtain would close, the awards would be given.
She told
the next
a few
one.
Jokes.
Yeah, that weren't stupid. Yeah, yeah.
She's easy on the eyes, too, which helps.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah. Good. I hope that she'll do it again. You know, there may be a conflict, you know, with the Edge. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think she would be into doing it again. She had a good time. Yeah. It was good for her, I think, as well. So.
It's great for you guys because everybody knows her name.
Yeah, that was our first main credibility thing that we achieved, I think.
For more information on the Toronto Independent Music Awards, just go to our site, indycan.com. Thanks again for Martin for coming in. Thanks for Redline Recorders for hosting our show. And thank you for listening. We're going to finish with one more from 1-900, Giving Up the Ghost.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Indie Scene, an IndieCan music production.
For more information on the artists featured on today's show, visit IndieCan.com.